Hello, everybody. Today in the Charlie Kirk Show, is Michelle Obama running for president in 2024? Filmmaker Joel Gilbert walks us through that. You guys can go to salemnow.com to check out that film. And also, Libby Emmons joins us about the snake, Dr. Deborah Birx. And also, I reflect briefly in this episode on what I believe to be the biggest obstacle to Trump's success in 2017, through 2021, his first term, personnel. And I believe it's something we got to talk about. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Open up your podcast app, type in Charlie Kirk Show, and hit subscribe in the upper right-hand corner. This Friday, Trump DeSantis, brought to you by Turning Point Action, Greg Gutfeld, Laura Ingraham, Kaylee McEnany, Donald Trump Jr., Josh Hawley, Judge Jeanine Pirro, Ted Cruz. See them all in Tampa, Florida. TPUSA.com/SAS. That is TPUSA.com/SAS. As always, you can email me your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. I knew from the moment I saw her, I turned to Connor, I turned to Andrew, and I said, I don't trust that woman. The scarf lady. You see, I was watching way too much TV back during the Chinese coronavirus. I said, something about that scarf lady, I don't trust her. She is a snake with a scarf. And we were told everyone, oh, Deborah Birx is great. And I'll be honest, you know how many people in the White House? At some point I should not declassify. That's the wrong word. I should just publicize my emails that I sent to the White House. These long, incredibly passionate emails. You guys are making such a mistake. Why are you locking things down? Stop this, please. And to their credit, or in their defense, they were getting so many emails. They didn't know which side was up. They were overwhelmed. But I said, stop trusting the scarf woman. Yet they did. Well, now the scarf woman is out with a new book. And she admits to, at the very least, being deceitful. And maybe as bad as being treasonous. She says, quote, I couldn't do anything that would reveal my true intention. Quote, to use the travel ban as one brick in the construction of a larger wall of the protective measures we needed to enact very soon. With us to help unpack this scandal of scarf woman is Libby Emmons from the Post Millennial. Libby, welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Hey, Charlie, how's it going?
Good. Libby, tell us the story. Why are we learning it now? And what has scarf woman been up to?
So scarf woman, AKA Dr. Deborah Birx, was part of the task force in the Trump administration to deal with the pandemic. She does have this new book out called Silent Invasion, and she's talking about how they went about dealing with COVID during her time, in the administration and working with Trump. It's actually really fascinating because, as you said, one of the quotes is that she had to be careful not to reveal her true intentions. She writes this outright. This is something that she's proud of, the way that she handled things in dealing with this. That's what she said. So early on in March of 2020, she had a meeting with Fauci and some other people that she trusted on her team. And they agreed to push this 15 days to stop the spread thing, agreeing at the time that this was just going to be the beginning. They didn't tell Trump or his advisors that this was their plan, that this 15 days was just the start of a much bigger lockdown, economic shutdown type of plan. They just went little by little, and they just pushed these measures through one at a time without revealing that their plan was to make it worse. Trump's advisors, as she discusses in the book, were primarily interested in the economic outcomes and the disasters that were potential from economic shutdown. And, you know, she seems to think that that's a base concern. Looking at our culture and our society right now, I don't think that's such a base concern personally.
Incredible. Let's play cut 219. This is Scarf Woman on television. Play cut 219.
Contact trace the way that we need to?
I think that's why the criteria that you can see the Gates that are that the federal government has recommended.
Yeah, the Gates Foundation. I mean, the federal government. It's an interesting slip of tongue. So what else has she revealed in this book? I mean, it seems as if she is admitting to being outwardly deceitful and undermining Trump at every corner and every turn.
She also discusses how her recommendations were not based on U.S. domestic data, but were based on data from South Korea, China, and Italy primarily, and that this is what she was using to give recommendations. One thing that she did say, and she said this also in speaking to Congress in June, is that she doesn't believe the CDC has good data or has the methodology to get good data because they're primarily based on a voluntary reporting system. So she did tell Representative Jim Jordan that one of her main concerns and reasons that she wrote this book was to encourage better data collection in the U.S. So that is something that is interesting as well. Yeah, that's another thing. Another thing that she said was that when she submitted guidance to Trump and his advisors, it would come back redlined, and she would take the same guidance that they had pulled out of her ask, you know, for recommendations, and she would just put it in the same guidance, but in a different place and try to obfuscate it. And this is another thing that she seemed to be proud of. In talking to Jim Jordan also, he asked her a rather interesting question. He said, when the government was giving us information about vaccine efficacy and the possibility of transmission, were they lying or guessing? And she said, in fact, that they were instead hoping that the guidance was correct.
It's just extraordinary. And so, I mean, just guessing on some of the most consequential public health questions of our time. And so you read the exact quotes here. It's almost, if you kind of want your secret pass into upper echelon of liberal society, you basically have to say, like, yeah, you know, I undermine Trump. I mean, it's the only way she could be accepted in kind of these social circles. So now we have a new variant, and we have this man who's dressed like a woman. Cut 218. I'm not going to pretend like this is normal and okay. This is a mockery. They're laughing at us. It's a joke. Play cut 218.
Still concerned with COVID-19. The pandemic is not done yet. And we're concerned, as you said, with the rise of particularly the BA5 variant, which seems to be the most contagious variant yet.
And then cut 216 after that.
That if cases continue on the same trajectory, they will have an indoor mask mandate. It looks likely that that will happen. I assume that's something you support. Should other states look at this?
Yeah, my view on this has been for 2 years, well before I came into this current role, my view on this has been very clear, which is local jurisdictions, cities, counties, states should make decisions about mask mandates because communities are different and their patterns of transmission are different. That said, CDC has very clear guidance on this as well through their COVID community levels. And the CDC recommendation is that when you're in a high zone, that sort of orange zone, as LA County is, you know, people wearing masks indoors is really important and it really will make a difference.
It's funny. Now they're all for decentralization, but do you think that there's a big midterm push coming for this new variant?
Oh, yeah. If they could lock us down before the midterms and get us all to mail in our ballots, I think they would be very happy. I think it behooves Americans to think for themselves, as it always does, and not to be cowed by these people who declare themselves to be experts without actually using data culled from the United States or from, you know, the states that need to make these determinations. I also just personally think that a mask mandate, that the government ever telling you what you have to wear to cover your face, I don't think that's ever appropriate. And I don't think that Americans should go back to being told what to do by these people. It's just really absurd. Yeah, I won't do agree. It.
Yeah, well, we're not going to comply. We are now in July of 2022, and it has been 2 years and several months since the 15 days to slow the spread. And Dr. Zelenko, may he rest in peace, he warned us not to fall for these tricks. That was some of his dying words. He said, do not fall for these tricks. It's very important. Libby Emmons from the Post Millennial. Libby, thank you so much.
Thanks, Charlie.
Is it possible that what has happened to the United States and the world from COVID-19 to 9/11 are part of an ancient mystery? Is it a warning? Does the mystery tell us what is yet to come? Do we have the key to uncover it? New York Times bestselling author Jonathan Cahn takes audiences on an epic journey to uncover the stunning mystery. The Harbinger of Things to Come is available at salemnow.com. Uncover the ancient signs that warn of impending calamity. The harbingers that appear in the last days of an ancient nation have now appeared on American soil. The key, the hope, and what you need to know about the future. From Jonathan Cahn comes the explosive motion picture, The Harbinger of Things to Come. If you missed it in theaters, stream it today at salemnow.com. The Harbinger of Things to Come, the one movie you cannot afford to miss. Go to salemnow.com. That is salemnow.com. What do you think about Trump 2024 when it comes to personnel? Morton Blackwell from the Leadership Institute would always say that personnel is policy. That the people you actually have in positions of power matters as much as the policy that you are trying to put forward. That if you do not have good personnel, then your policy is not going to happen. And boy, is that exemplified in people like Rex Tillerson or Omarosa or Fauci or Dr. Birx. Now, part of it is that there was a behind-the-scenes, behind-the-back campaign and agenda that people thought that they could game Trump. Now, I'm not going to say that it's a failure or a failing, but it was definitely the greatest impediment for Donald Trump's success in his first term was the personnel around him. Unfortunately, a lot of these people were coached to just flatter him in the meeting, and they give him a bunch of power, and they'll eventually then stab him in the back. I mean, it goes all the way up to the top levels of our government that we have seen one person after the other, and it's worth looking at. And I'd love your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And yes, someone just emailed us, Charlie, this, it was maddening to see the lack of loyalty. And so if there is a Trump second term, if there is a Trump chance to run again in 2024, of which I will support, and I know a lot of you will as well, and we'll encourage you to do that also, there needs to be an agenda and a clearinghouse for personnel. Because imagine how much would have gotten done if we didn't have these sort of backstabbing snakes and serpents, Birx and Fauci being among them. Now, it's frustrating because many of us on the outside that have been nothing but loyal to President Trump, you have to look at these deceitful and arrogant and prideful, double-minded people that were able to usurp and undermine the entire government. It's a very, very important thing as we think about Trump in 2024. People say, oh, if Trump and DeSantis runs, I said, look, I'm a loyal person. President Trump has always been so good to me, and I told him if he ran again, we'd have his back. You would want nothing else from me. You want me to be like a politician and say one thing and do another? Absolutely not. And I'd enthusiastically be behind him. Now, some people say, oh, I'm going to be behind DeSantis. All right, well, whatever. We'll see if DeSantis runs against Trump. We've asked that question multiple times here on this program. They're both speaking at our event this weekend, brought to you by Turning Point Action. We're going to have a straw poll to see kind of how that all shakes out, to see who wins. And look, I think a deeper question is, how will Donald Trump satisfy the one concern that his base has? And his base does not have a concern about his capacity. They don't have a concern about his vision. They don't have a concern about his his integrity or his commitment to the nation. No, the only concern, the only vulnerability that Donald Trump has going into 2024 is the personnel that were around him. Cut 108, Jill Biden says schools are where policies become people. You see, the left, they understand that personnel is policy, and they look at schools as incubators to staff their government. Play cut 108.
Down the news on the TV, telling you about people who want to stop you from doing your job, and you put your shoulders back, and you just go out and focus on your students. There is so much weight on all of you, but you carry it. Our schools are where policies become people.
Taco, otherwise said by Jill Biden. I just loved how she got totally memed, and she had to learn what a meme was this last week. But she's not wrong. The left knows that they can turn people into policies and vice versa through our government schools. I love your thoughts, freedom at charliekirk.com. Personnel is the mountain that we must overcome going into 2024. We cannot take our eyes off it. We need the who and the biographies of the people going into our government. There's so many good people out there. And boy, that first term was so derailed and undermined by feckless snakes. It's really out of control. Inflation is at a 40-year high. Your cash is getting sucked right out of your wallet with higher prices on gas, groceries, practically everything. Look, you got to take charge of your money right now. So here's a principle that we say. Don't use the big banks that hate you. Bank of America is canceling conservatives. A team member that we have at Turning Point USA literally just had his bank account shut down by Bank of America. Literally no longer allowed to use Bank of America because of his politics. True story. So when you want to consolidate your debt and use equity in your home to do so, to lower your monthly expenses, you have to use my friends, Andrew and Todd, at andrewandtodd.com. You have to know what you're going through. So look, I just had dinner with Andrew and Todd in Orange County. We had a great time. They love the Lord. They know the Bible super well. They're ethical. They're beautiful people. They really are. They're wonderful. And Andrew and Todd aren't brokers. They're bankers who handle your refi loan personally from start to finish. And they're always in your corner. In fact, they're helping me with the problem right now. Just all this nonsense with interest rates and all this are helping me clarify it. They're phenomenal to work with. They're responsive. They're Christians. They're conservative. It's andrewandtodd.com to beat inflation by lowering your monthly expenses and protect your greatest asset, your home. So don't use these woke banks. Bank of America, again, my team member, I'm not going to say his name. You guys know him. He's been on our show. Literally, Bank of America sent him a note saying, we are no longer allowing you to bank with us. Boom, like that, all because of politics. Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage share your values. I trust them. That's why I work with them. I hang out with them casually, and I've got to know them really well. They'll treat you right, and that when you use them, you're not using Citibank or Chase or these people that hate your values, that believe in this trans nonsense. Don't use those banks, diversity, equity, inclusion banks. Nope. Andrew and Todd at andrewandtodd.com. So just write that down right now. Write it in your phone. You might say, oh, Charlie, I don't need to refinance or whatever. Well, maybe you will 2 months from now. Maybe you young millennials out there, maybe the millennials listening to our show, my fellow millennials, you're going to buy a home soon. Maybe you're getting married and you want to buy something. It's andrewandtodd.com for a quick mortgage checkup. Use the equity in your home before it's too late. Go to andrewandtodd.com. That's andrewandtodd.com. Stop giving money to people who hate you. Andrewandtodd.com love the Lord. They love America and they're great friends. So I encourage you to use them as your go-to partner for anything mortgage related. Stop using the banks who hate you, andrewandtodd.com. So I have to tell you, the people I really trust for political analysis, they'll all kind of turn around when you ask them about 2024 and they'll lean in and they'll say, but what about Michelle Obama? You see, Michelle Obama seems to be the X factor. We're told she's the most popular person in America. Before I welcome the film's mastermind, someone I've known for quite a while, and we had a phenomenal mutual friend, Tom Patrick, may he rest in peace, I want to play cut 214.
Welcome, Michelle Obama!
Michelle Obama is the most popular woman in America. You know I hate politics.
You can forget about the disclaimer. I'm convinced that Michelle Obama is running for president in 2024.
Systemic racism, pepper spray, and rubber bullets on peaceful protesters.
She's following the exact same formula that Barack did to become president. Michelle was the keynote speaker at the 2020 Democrat convention, just like Barack was in 2004. Barack once ran a voter registration organization. Now, so does Michelle.
That's how we change America.
SalemNow.com. You guys can watch the movie Michelle Obama 2024. With us right now is the man behind the film, Joel Gilbert. Joel, good to see you again.
Great to be here. Thank you, Charlie.
So, Joel, I'll give you the floor, and then I'm going to play some devil's advocate, and we'll have some fun with it. Why'd you make the film, and why do you think Michelle is running in 2024?
Well, as you showed in the trailer just now, I think she's following the exact same formula that Barack did to become president. Barack had this voter registration organization when he started in politics called Project Vote. Michelle started When We All Vote, which she was here a few weeks ago in Los Angeles, gave a one-hour fiery speech hitting every Democrat talking point. She was the keynote speaker at the 2020 Democrat convention, just like Barack was in 2004 for John Kerry. That's the slot that they give to the person they think will probably be the nominee at the next convention. And, of course, Barack wrote his book, Dreams for My Father, that he based his candidacy on, his personal story. And Michelle wrote Becoming, her memoir, in 2018. She's still on a book tour for that. So I think she's really following in his footsteps. And as you mentioned, she is the most popular person on the planet. And she is a very political person. Her, disclaimer that she's used for years is, you know, I hate politics, but all politicians hate politics. They just love the power and they love the agenda that they can put forth. So I became convinced that she's running, and I made both a film, which, as you said, is on SalemNow.com, mm-hmm. and a book version, which you can get on Amazon.com.
So I agree with all of that, but she says, look, you mentioned I hate politics and that I like living in Martha's Vineyard and everyone's so nasty and I'm going to do this in real time. But didn't she have to take like a mental health break or something, Joel, that she had to take? Yeah. CNN, Michelle Obama opens up about mental health struggles during COVID pandemic, that she needs to calm down and she has tools to cope with depression. She's a victim, right? I mean, she's not going to run for president. She's a celebrity.
Look, Michelle, as I go into in the film and the book, I go into her whole life history that she's been in politics since she was 6 years old, tagging along with her father, who was a precinct captain for the Democrat Party machine in Chicago. She is all politics all the time. She went so over the top, people don't all remember, but in 2007-08, she was so political every night, giving these speeches to sold out, you know, huge crowds. She went over the top. She said, for the first time in my life, I'm proud of my country. And that's when they had to reel her back in. And they said, look, Michelle, you hate politics and you just want to be the mom in chief. And so they kind of made this new space for her to tone it down a little bit because she was so political. So I think she's been emerging the last few years like that appearance that you mentioned. It's just her way of relating to people, of saying, hey, I'm just like you and I have the same problems. She's reaching out to the, you know, crowd of women and working mothers, that Hillary supporting crowd, the Oprah crowd. She's constantly working them, both with her book and in her appearances. Anyone, I just challenge everyone, look at her Twitter account and tell me she's not running for president.
So I want to play, well, here's what we do know almost for certain, that Joe Biden is not running. Let's play cut 221.
How did he manage to get through the campaign? Well, it turned out, we learned later, his staff, supervised by Dr. Jill, his wife, was giving him pills before every public appearance, checking the time and at a certain hour giving him a dose of something. Now, that's not a guess. We're not making that up. We've spoken directly to someone who was there and saw it happen multiple times. Now, before taking the medication, this person said, Biden was, quote, like a small child. You could not communicate with him. He changed completely because he was on drugs, and he clearly still is on drugs. No one's pushing to know what those drugs are. We should know.
And the media won't be bothered by that. Is it fair to say, Joel, and I trust your judgment, Biden's not in the mix for 2024?
I don't think he's in the mix. And anyone who is angry at Joe Biden or mad at Biden, you're just kind of playing into the hands of those that write his teleprompter.
Yes.
I think clearly Michelle Obama has been lurking in the background, developing her audience. And I think she'll probably reappear after the midterms next spring. It's going to go something like this. She's going to say, you know, I hate politics, but I love this nation and I love your children. And people have asked me to run. So I'm, you know, doing everybody a favor. And she's going to be running for president. And she'll have a huge advantage of all the media on her side and an appeal to nostalgia. Remember how much you love the Obama years. Remember how much, you know, how happy you were. And that's what will be her basic appeal. And then she'll pretty much, I think, they'll pursue the same policies as we're seeing with Joe Biden.
Hilariously, she's not wrong. I actually was happier when Obama was president because the country was just not as destroyed. Anyway, that's a separate issue, but not necessarily personally happy. I just mean happier about where the country was. So I want to ask you this. Michelle Obama is a very nasty person, isn't she? I mean, she makes Hillary Clinton look like, you could say, Mother Teresa. I mean, she's very bitter. I'm told that she has hatred for white people. Is that true?
No, that's not really true. I mean, what we find out in my film, I went and spoke to, her kindergarten classmates, elementary school teachers, three of her boyfriends growing up, her professor at Princeton. I spoke to her mother. So you really get a real picture of Michelle. And the picture that emerges is someone who ran away from the black community every chance she got growing up for education. And then when she had a professional career in Chicago, she was always hired by white elites, worked for Mayor Richard Daley. And she was the assistant planning commissioner for this scheme called redevelopment, where they knocked down the projects like Cabrini Green, made 20,000 blacks homeless, and gave the land away to Democrat donor developers like Tony Resco, who built these single family homes and gave part of the money back to the politicians. And then having proven her callousness, she was hired by the University of Chicago Medical Center to head up something called the Southside Health Collaborative. They were losing too much money because the same Southside black folks were coming to the emergency room and getting medical care for free. They didn't have proper insurance. And so Michelle headed up the scheme to make sure they didn't come to the hospital. She'd actually put them in these vans and dump them in these crappy neighborhood clinics. So Michelle has had a lifelong aspiration to whiteness. She really doesn't have any black friends. She always ran away from the black community every chance she got. So she doesn't really hate white people, anything like that. She exploited the black community growing up in her professional career. And then to add insult to injury, as you see in my film, she pretends to be one of these ordinary black people that she spent her life selling out, would be a better characterization.
No, I stand corrected. That's so interesting. And the reason I'm asking is I really haven't done a lot of scholarship on Michelle Obama. And there's just a lot of rumors. I mean, and speaking of which, we'll get to one that you wrote an op-ed on that I find to be appropriately provocative. And right. So, yeah, it's just interesting. People say, yeah, she hates white people. I was like, I don't really think that deeply about Michelle Obama, actually. But it's actually it would actually be better politically if she hated white people, because that's kind of like cool and in vogue. What you're telling me is she loves white people and has disdain for black people. Is that right?
Yeah, I have it on tape. You can watch it in the film on salemnow.com. You can live stream it or get the DVD. She actually says, openly at many of these Becoming Tour events, she spilled the beans. She said that she was afraid to go out of her house. She's afraid of getting beat up by black kids. In her book, she writes about this girl named Dee Dee, who she had a fist fight with because she accused her of acting white. Actually, the term was Oreo, meaning black on the outside and white on the inside. So she was always accused of being a white girl growing up in South Shore, which is not even on the South Side, by the way. And so this is the real story, is she always ran away from the black community and exploited them once she got these professional jobs working on behalf of the white establishment.
So fascinating. Okay, I'm going to read from your article and you could take us through it. Michelle Obama's changing sexual identity. What is going on here?
Okay, well, I wrote this article because I came across, believe it or not, her voter registration form in Chicago showed that she registered to vote as a male in 1994. And then in 2008, she changed the sex from male to female. Now, obviously, this was a clerical error. I point that out because I do get asked a lot. People say, well, is Michelle a dude? You know, and I say, no, she's not a dude. It was just a silly internet rumor that started when Joan Rivers answered an innocent question. Someone said years ago, will we have a gay president? She said, well, we already have one, and Michelle is transgender. Now, she's a comedian. It was obviously a joke, but it spurred a lot of internet memes and kind of mean-spirited stuff, I think, because of Michelle's America bashing politics. So when I came across her voter registration, I had to write an article showing that she accidentally, I'm sure, had circled the M for male and then corrected it later.
Accidentally, I agree. So everyone can email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. They could check out salemnow.com. That's salemnow.com. Michelle Obama 2024. You guys can watch the movie on demand or buy the DVD on Salem Now. So Joel, after the break, I want to ask you about how formidable would Michelle Obama be? This is something that I think has yet to be determined because, again, I'm not, you're kind of the Michelle Obama resident scholar here, which congratulations, kind of carved out a niche for yourself, which probably is going to be a gold mine. I mean, what's her temperament like? What is she going to be like on, don't answer yet, what, on the stump? I mean, running for office is it's a very real thing. Let's say she runs and let's say she gets the nomination, which based on what you're telling me seems to be an inevitability if she does run. I find that hard to disagree with. Gavin Newsom would give a run for the money, but he's not Michelle Obama. How would she do in a general? I mean, she caters definitely to a specific sliver of the population, but I can't imagine her support goes beyond kind of like Oprah watching soccer moms and the base of the Democrat Party. Am I wrong?
I think her popularity does transcend a lot of the norms that you might think about. You can stop anyone under the age of 25, and they'll say something positive about Michelle Obama. They're pretty much unaware of her political activism. They've seen her on magazine covers. They've seen her on, you know, online. So they're unaware of her politics. Now, once she comes across and presents these policies, I think she will be vulnerable to criticism. But the Republicans are going to be afraid because anyone who criticizes her will be called racist, mm-hmm. sexist, or hater. So she's going to be tough. Now, she actually is vulnerable for anyone that would make her, for example, if a Republican candidate would demand that she apologize for how she treated the Black community in Chicago when she worked for the mayor's office or when she worked for the University of Chicago Medical Center, that would open a whole can of worms. Michelle does not handle criticism well. She's not good at being confronted with any issues. Mm. So she is vulnerable. And I think when you see the film, you'll understand how vulnerable she really is if somebody would take her on, but that's not a given.
So it's fair to say that she gets flustered under pressure.
Absolutely. Now, I'm sure she's been working on this, and don't forget she'll have the media completely behind her. It's going to be tough to put her in any situation, even debates. You have, you know, 60 seconds to say something. It's going to be tough. And Michelle would be a very formidable candidate for the Republicans to have to take on, not a little of which is because of their fear of being attacked for criticizing her, which is part of the reason I think she's such a good candidate for the Democrats.
So in closing here, Joel, then what would the roadmap be if you're right? And we don't know, but I mean, you've made a whole movie about it. It's super interesting. Everyone should see the movie regardless, because this is someone who's going to be in politics. I think she might run in 28 or 32, but she's not going away. She's too popular. The forces to be will pressure her and be like, look, you don't have to do anything. Just be president. We'll do all the work, because you can get the, you know, the right boxes checked. What are we to do to prevent what seems to be the ascending star that could potentially run a basement campaign and actually get away with it?
Yeah, I think, I think this is why I came out with this movie and book well in advance of when I think she's going to announce it, which will be next year. I think if people watch the film, you'll see and understand that Michelle's entire life story that she told, and she still tells to this day, is not true. that she's from a political family. She doesn't have any black friends. She always throughout her life ran away from the black community as far as she could. To this day, she lives in Martha's Vineyard of all places. And just understanding her background is not what she presented. Her life story is just as fictitious as Barack, and she's going to run a racially divisive campaign.
Yeah.
Because she struggles with her, so it's called black authenticity. She struggles with
it. I meant to ask, how's their marriage?
How's their marriage?
Yeah.
I don't have any information on their marriage. I only know that they're both very political people. They're two sides of the same coin, and they both, seek power for different reasons. For Michelle, I reveal some very deep psychological issues she has that are driving her to run for the presidency, and that's why I'm convinced she's running.
No, it's always seemed like a Hillary and Bill Clinton thing. It just seemed like a marriage of convenience, and that's me just looking as a spectator. I don't sense, let's say, organic chemistry between the two. Joel Gilbert, check out salemnow.com, Michelle Obama 2024. That is salemnow.com. Joel, you did a great thing here, and if she ends up winning, you will have the reference point that got us educated very early and some good opposition research. So thank you so much, Joel. Great work.
Thank you.
Thanks. SalemNow.com. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.